bread is coming. The adventures of Catherine will grow.
This is Comics Catch Up. Suggested by you, the listeners of War Rocket Ajax, that we have missed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comics Catch Up. This is the War Rocket Ajax spinoff podcast where we catch up on some comics that we missed somewhere along the way while we were reading other comics.
And with only one exception, we do it at you, the listeners' request.
I'm Chris Sims. That was Matt Wilson that you just heard. And we had, I don't know, man, I hated it.
You know, I went into this with really high hopes.
It just surprisingly overrated. Once again, our listeners have led us astray.
Okay, so we read 2014's Thor 1 through 8, and it's just we're kidding. It was really good.
Yeah, no, it's great. I thought it'd be a very funny bit if we pretended to hate this one in the way that we have hated other things that people
Honestly absolutely loved this 8 issues of comics.
Yeah, it's I have a couple of minor beefs with it, but it's a hell of a way to reinvent Thor. And it's a hell of a way to kick off a series. That first issue is incredible.
Here's what I think is kind of the most notable thing about these 8 issues. Mm-hmm. They read one unit of comics. They read a mini series. They have threads that go the issues. There are threads that go throughout all 8. There are mini arcs within it, but it really does tell one complete story with a beginning, middle, and end. With a satisfying payoff, it's just really good.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Matt. I didn't realize this until I literally got to the last page of the of number 8, which is the last issue of this particular Thor series. It ends because of Secret Wars.
Yes,
so it gets cut off essentially, and it does not read like it. And again, I'm sure Jason Aaron is, if not the guy at Marvel, and I think it's kind of fair to say he's the guy right now, he is the dude doing Avengers.
Certainly one of the guys.
Yeah, he's one of the guys, if not the guy. So I'm sure he was at the retreat, right? Figuring out how he needed to plot out his series. It ends perfectly for you to go and do some other Thor stuff for a minute. It's the perfect place, and that's juggling that kind of having a series that you think is going to go on longer than it is, and you got to wrap it up real quick is very difficult.
Well, I don't get the sense that that's what happened here. I feel like Aaron must have known he had 8 issues.
Yeah.
Because it's just the right amount of time to kind of string along the reader and keep the mystery as to who this new Thor is, and then pay it off in issue 8 in a really beautiful way.
Yeah.
Where we find out, we as the readers find out that it's Jane, but the Odin son still doesn't know.
Yeah.
And won't know until after Secret Wars. I think it's just really well done. And the sort of red herring of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that Thor is convinced that it is.
Yeah, who I am almost completely unfamiliar with, Roz Solomon, who obviously is named after Roz Kirby.
Yes.
But I have no idea what her deal is or where she showed up. I guess she was she's a Jason Aaron creation, apparently. Jason Aaron and Nick Klein from Thor God of Thunder. So, as I have said before, I want to go back and read all the Hickmans. I want to go back and read all the Jason Aarons.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Another thing about this. It's a very clear unit of story that works as one story that also very obviously ties into a lot of stuff that came before it, like all the Roxxon stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like clearly Roxxon got Laufey's head, his skull, before this. Laufey's skull is sort of the MacGuffin of this story, because everybody's after it. But they got that before this. Ross Solomon has been dealing with Roxxon before this. And then it plays into so much that comes after it, because you can see the seeds being planted for later stories here.
Yeah, dude. War of the Realms gets set up here. War of the Realms happened this year.
Because of Laufey being revived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that shit all tied together.
And Malekith has been kind of the driving force behind this whole thing. Malekith is, to this story, kind of like the Joker is to Batman RIP, or Morrison's Batman run.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair analogy?
I think it is. I think you're spot on. Because here's the thing. Because it can't be Loki. Because everybody likes Loki.
Yeah.
And Loki was busy being
a hero.
Protagonist slash anti-hero slash villain masquerading as a hero slash anti-hero again. Slash. He had a lot going on, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Well,
Kid Loki was still around at this point.
Kid Loki wasn't around at this point. Kid Loki was gone. This is like Handsome Loki was around by now. Because Handsome Loki's on the cover of number 7.
Okay.
But yeah, like, you are absolutely not wrong. And, like, I talked about it setting up War of Realms, which is a story that happens 5 years later in 2019. But this also, Jason Aaron takes over Thor in 2012. And we see...
That sounds about right.
We see King Thor with his one arm. And then 2 years later, which is an eternity in modern comics, we get Thor losing his arm. To set that up. And also, King Thor's arm in Thor number 1 is the Destroyer arm. And Thor cuts off the Destroyer's arm. the Odinson cuts off the Destroyer's arm in this comic.
Yeah.
Shit is tight.
It is hard to know how to refer to him. Because he's been Thor for so long.
Yes.
But Jane
and
Foster
Thor. It's literally
Thor,
his first name.
He gives Jane Foster Thor that name.
Yes.
In this.
Yes.
And everybody's reaction is really, really good. Like, Thor's reaction to this new Thor, Odinson's reaction to this new Thor, is curiosity and at first rage. Like, at first, like, you've stolen my hammer. But then it's supportive. He gives this new Thor his name. Freya's reaction is right on. There's this great conflict between Freya and Odin that's going on in here that plays out all the way up to War of the Realms.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there are so many moving pieces. There's so many pieces on the chessboard. And Aaron is just deftly moving them around.
Yeah. A thing that I think is really great is the way everyone reacts to Thor and the way Thor presents herself. And one of the best, like, you can only pull this shit in a comic book things that happens in this, because Matt, that's why we read them, right? Because we like the stuff that you can do with them.
Yeah.
The fucking thought balloons.
The thought balloons are back.
The fucking thought bubbles.
But they serve a very, perhaps, unique purpose in this particular story, because here's one thing that the thought balloons. Okay, we were reading this after knowing that Jane Foster was Thor.
Yes.
So it was a bit of a different experience for us than somebody reading it for the first time when it's first coming out, when the audience doesn't find that out until issue 8 of this. But that is like a key clue to, at the very least, this new Thor not being Asgardian.
Yes, which Thor, the Odinson, does not know, and like colors his reaction to for the first like few issues of his kind of search to figure out who she is, because the first people he suspects are Freya and Sif.
Yeah.
And he also suspects Valkyrie and Hildegard, who is not a Jason Aaron original. She is a character from the 70s, baby. Bronze Age Marvel in the house. But I love that we are told up front in a very comic booky way that you can only really do in comics, oh, hey, she's not from Asgard, just so you know.
Well, and the way that that is laid out is that Jane's thought balloons have Jane talking like Jane.
Yeah, they're Jane's thoughts.
They're Jane's thoughts. But when Thor speaks, it's in that kind of faux Shakespearean Thor talk.
Yeah, she talks like Thor.
Even
Thor.
To the point where she's surprising herself with what she's saying and what she knows.
Yes, which I love.
Somehow becoming Thor, picking up Mjolnir, has given Jane Thor all this knowledge about the realms and the history of the Frost Giants and all of that stuff.
Which is also a great way, like without saying it, a great way of saying, by the way, she's Thor. Like this isn't this isn't Eric Masterson. This isn't like, you know, she's not just someone who picked up the hammer. She's Thor. She knows the stuff Thor knows. She does the stuff Thor does. Which I think is such a great thing to like establish right up front. Cause I mean, Jason Aaron and Russell Dodderman knew the reaction they were going to get. And we know that because of the Absorbing Man scene that I know you want to talk about.
I definitely want to talk about that. We'll get to that in a second, but yes, she is Thor. Yes, she does the things Thor does, but she also does some things differently. For example, anytime she uses the hammer, a lot of characters remark, I've never seen the hammer do that before.
Yeah, because she throws the hammer, and instead of going like straight and coming back to her hand, it goes all around, like it loops and crashes and in a very interesting way that is actually one of my few gripes with the book. If you want me to get into that now.
Well, let's hold off on it.
Okay.
Because I want to do this real quick, because I feel like we've been talking about this a good bit as if everybody listening to this has read it. And one thing that a few people have said to me about this particular show is they would like a little bit of a synopsis of the book. So Thor 1-8 was a continuation of the Mighty Thor series. This one didn't have like the Mighty on the title or God of Thunder on the title. It's just Thor. And it started, what is the series, the miniseries that preceded this, Chris?
This picks up pretty much from Thor God of Thunder 1-25.
Yeah,
which is the where Aaron starts up.
That's the story with the God Butcher and everything.
And then the immediately preceding thing that makes Thor, Odin's son, unworthy of the hammer is Original Sins.
Original Sin. I remembered. Yes, it's in Original Sin. So there's a moment.
Everybody knows a secret.
In the miniseries Original Sin, where Nick Fury, who has become the Watcher, whispers something into Thor's ear. We never find out in this series what he said, but it makes Thor unworthy of wielding Mjolnir. And that's where this series opens. This series opens with Thor unable to pick up his own hammer. Thor Odinson.
If you don't remember Original Sins, that was the comic where you found out that Nick Fury never actually had the Infinity Formula and he was just an old dude on the moon. And then the Watcher's eyeballs exploded, and everybody learned secrets that the Watcher knew. It's not my favorite event.
But it did lead to this.
Yes.
So, at the end of the first issue, someone whose face we don't see picks up Mjolnir and becomes Thor. We find out later that that's Jane Foster. But much of this 8 issues is just following this Thor, Goddess of Thunder, which she is referred to as Goddess of Thunder. Mm-hmm. We're following her as she's kind of getting used to it, as she's picking up some of the slack left behind by Thor, who has really kind of gone down a downward spiral since becoming unworthy. His arm gets cut off pretty early on.
Yeah, he can't lift Mjolnir, so when Malekith shows up and attacks the Roxxon C-Lab, when he attacks C-Lab 2014, Thor has to go into action with his old weapon, Yarnbjorn, the Iron Bear, which is what he used as
an axe.
Yeah. Which he used as a younger god before he had Mjolnir, which that, and I think Cole Obsidian, who shows up, no, Cole Obsidian, Cole Borson. Cole Obsidian is a Black Order guy, but Cole Borson and Yarnbjorn being young Thor's weapon, I believe, are from the Fraction era. So it's picking up on those as well.
So we've got Odin's son at a low point. A new Thor has taken the mantle, and it causes all these conflicts. Meanwhile, the huge oil company Roxxon is dealing in finding ancient mythical artifacts. We find out that its CEO is a Minotaur.
Yeah, they also have attack sharks.
Oh, you know they have attack sharks.
Hey, Matt, fucking Roxxon is great.
Great at being terrible. And there's also all this Asgardian conflict going on as well. There are frost giants showing up, led by Malekith, because Malekith has kind of become their leader now. And
yes, Malekith, who is a dark elf of Svartalfheim, has made a pact with the giants of Jotunheim, the frost giants, where they have an alliance essentially against the other realms, specifically against Asgard and Midgard.
So that's essentially what's happening throughout these eight issues. And all these stories, as I said, are happening kind of like threaded between each other. Like, they're all kind of happening together. They're little small mini arcs within the book, but those are the continuing threads through all eight issues. And again, it's just so well thought out and constructed. But Chris, since you brought up that sticking point of not the way Thor uses the hammer the way she does, being one of your small gripes about the book, I would like to hear about that.
It's not a gripe with it happening in the story. I actually think it's a really good idea, and like gives Jane a very different flavor to her action than we've seen with Thor. And to that end, I think that is probably why it is depicted the way it is. I also want to say, I think Russell Dodderman is really good at drawing. And I think that's clear.
One of my small gripes about the book is that Russell Dodderman doesn't draw the whole thing. And that, I know that that is one of something that comes with monthly comics, especially when you're on a ticking clock and you have to get this done before Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where it's like, this would be such a great eight issues of comics sold as a book. Imagine if it had like consistent art all the way through, and none of the fill-in art is bad. It just looks different.
It's all really good. It's all really well drawn. And I love the, I don't know if Dodderman did the design for Thor, if it was Olivier Coipel, because he does the covers, I believe.
Yeah.
But what a great design. I love the design for Lady Thor. I love the design for Thor, colon, Goddess of Thunder. You know what I mean. But I think because Dodderman has that kind of George Perez-ish, Jeff Darrow-ish kind of detail to his art, like kind of a Nick Darrington thing as well. When the hammer is rolling, like moving around the page in all those weird ways, the motion of it doesn't isn't as clear as I would like it to be. And again, I think that might be by design, because we're used to, you know, we've talked about the all splash page issue of Simonson's Thor, where
right.
he's fighting Fin Fang Foom slash the Midgard Serpent, and it's just fucking haymaker after haymaker. It's direct hitting something with a hammer, and that's how it should be. It is, you just fucking haul off and hit it. And for Jane to have something else that is equally like powerful and equally destructive, but it's not a straight line, is a really good choice. And I feel like depicting that was really difficult. And I do not envy Russell Dodderman the challenge that he faced with that. I just don't think it works on the page as well as I would like it to. It's visually confusing in a way that I had to look real long at some of those panels to figure out what was going on. There's some really good lettering involved in it, though, where like the sound effect follows the little family circus path of the hammer and goes from panel to panel. But those moments, I don't think, balance out the readability of those scenes. And so, weirdly enough, in this comic about Thor, I feel like the weakest stuff was the action scenes. I feel like the weakest stuff was the fight scenes. And again, this is a minor gripe, because it is otherwise a beautiful book and otherwise like very, very well staged. It's just that particular element of the action scenes didn't play on the page as well as I would have liked. Did you find that, or am I alone in this?
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think it bothered me. Mm-hmm. I could kind of just say, okay, the hammer's flying around, that's fine. Like, yeah. I didn't need to be able to follow it per se, as long as I could understand generally what was happening. I think the staging that kind of confused me more was when they're on the floating Roxxon headquarters.
Uh-huh. Roxxon Island?
Yeah, Roxxon Island. And there's this whole sequence where I forget the CEO's name, but Roxxon's CEO...
His name is Dario Agger.
Dario Agger, thank you.
It's D. Agger.
Yeah.
It's Dagger.
Dagger. He locks himself behind this super powerful set of doors. And
super doors?
Mjolnir is stuck. Like, the doors are separating Thor from Mjolnir.
Mm-hmm.
So it's constantly trying to push through the doors, but the doors are strong enough to hold it back. And some of the staging of that, just kind of like knowing where the frost giants were in relation to Thor, and like some, I mean, it's all there on the page, but like some of that was slightly hard to follow for me. But mm-hmm. I also don't think the action was the main thrust there. It was more kind of story stuff. So
yeah, you I see where you're coming from. You absolutely get enough of it to carry on with. But, you know, the thing is, it's if I describe it to you, it's a really cool bit of action that tells you a lot about the character. And if you read it on the page, I don't know that you get that as easily. But again, you know, good book.
Speaking of the fill-in artist, I believe it's only one issue. So, you know, I'm making it sound like maybe there's more of the book that's not Russell Dodderman than really there is. Mm-hmm. I think it's just issue 5. Which is drawn by Jorge Molina, who does a great job. Like, it's
yes.
It's a good-looking issue. That is also the issue with Absorbing Man and Titania, which
is
so good, because Absorbing Man's dialogue in that issue is essentially the shit terrible fans would say about having a woman as Thor.
Matt, he absorbed a red pill. Is what happened. And I kind of love this, because like the entire time I was like, well, wait a second. The Absorbing Man's girlfriend is Titania. Are they married? They might be married.
They might be married.
But I kind of love the idea that the Absorbing Man, you know, because he's kind of a fucking scumbag. I like that he likes strong women, but he doesn't like strong women.
Well,
thought that was very funny.
He makes that shitty point that so many fans make where he's like, yeah, but why can't you be a new character?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have to be Thor? Which is just like, maybe even a little too on the nose, but I very much enjoyed it in the moment.
Yeah. I also like when Titania shows up and knocks the Observing Man unconscious, which is very funny. And she goes, yeah, you're probably going to have it pretty hard. I had it pretty hard. Which is very good, given the in-continuity and out-of-continuity history of Titania.
Yeah, she basically is like, hey, I'm going to give you a pass this time.
Yeah.
Because...
hey, I'm just going to fight the... I'm not going to fight a female Thor. Come on.
Because, you know, we got to stick together.
Yeah.
At least this once. Although next time, I am going to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
This just once. Because I'm really excited about this new female Thor. It's very good.
Yeah, it's really good. And the reveal at the end is... like, the reveal of the fake-out, or that the suspicion of Roz is a fake-out,
mm-hmm.
is really well done. And then the reveal that it is Jane, which doesn't happen until really the last page.
Yeah.
Is
it's also, literally the last page, yeah.
Also really well done, because we saw Jane earlier, I believe in issue 6, where we see that she is dying of cancer,
mm-hmm.
which leads... Odinson to mark her name off of his list.
Yeah.
Understandably.
He doesn't know it's a magic hammer that can transform you, though. But I mean, thinking is not his strong point.
Yeah. It's really interestingly put together. I love the reveal. And the fact that that reveal is going into Secret Wars, so they're going to do that Thor's miniseries before it gets back into this. It's a nice little cliffhanger to leave readers on too.
A thing that I really, really loved about this last page, Matt, and the Jane reveal was that when she first picks up the hammer, when we first see the hand of the person picking up the hammer, she says, "There must always be a Thor," which sounds like a very like weird. Like 1990s Marvel Comics thing to say, and I'm pretty sure that might be in the Dargok Tor issue. You know about Future Thor, right, Matt? You know about Future Thor.
Yes.
From the Thor Corps?
From the Thor Corps.
But we finally, like 8 issues later, she explains what she meant, and it's a really interesting kind of idea about what Thor is. And it's the idea that he's the god who knows what it's like to be human. And the way she puts it, like she literally says, like, you know, a god who came to Earth and suffered so that other people wouldn't have to. And I had never really considered Thor to be like a Christ figure, but that's clearly what Aaron is getting at in that part of the script of Jane Foster's Thor. Is kind of a Jesus figure. It's what if Jesus was Thor, which is bananas, and I love it.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a really, like, for all the stuff about, you know, gods and such, I had never really thought of applying that to Thor, because in my head, like, you know, yeah, he's a god, but he's, you know, an Avenger also. but getting it all laid out like that was a thing that I think... explains what it's like to be Jane Foster in that universe and to quite literally have faith in Thor on a personal and also, like, if not religious, semi-religious or quasi-religious way. And I just think that's really interesting. Like, how many times have we said that we just want to see stuff that we've never seen before? You know?
All right, Chris, I think we've done a pretty good job of... examining these 8 issues.
Yeah.
Now it's up to us to rank them.
I mean, it's really good.
Yeah, I like it more than some of the other Jason Aaron Thor we have on here. For example, we have the God Butcher on the list.
I think it's better than the God Butcher.
Yeah. Let's see. That is currently on the list.
We kind of talked about it a little bit, but The Mighty Thor number one opens with Thor Odinson getting his fucking arm cut off by Malekith. So, like, that's a, it's a great opening. It's very much a what is happening opening. And I think you, like, a strong opening like that counts for a lot for me.
Yeah.
Especially when it is able to live up to it later.
The God Butcher is currently at number 258.
So this is going to go very high on the list.
Yeah, I think it might even go in the top 2. I know it's going to go in the top 250. It might even go in the top 200.
Number 200 right now is number 200 is Batman and Robin Volume 1, which you want to talk about a good opening. That's a good ass comic.
I honestly think this is weirdly comparable to Batman and Robin.
It really is, because
there's a replacement Batman.
Right?
It was a series that was clearly made to be shortish, right? Mm-hmm. And it leads to a period of there being two Batmen, which mm-hmm. this led to there being a period of two Thors. Yeah, I'm going not just weirdly comparable, comparable.
Comparable, yeah. I just went back and reread those not too long ago, and Matt, they are really good.
Oh yeah, like, they're extremely good.
And they've got that Frank Quitely art, which I think does like a lot of the tricks that Dauterman does, and is, you know, detailed like Dauterman's art. But like incorporates those sound effects and those tricks in a way that I think is a little bit better. And again, being second to Frank Quitely on that front is no shameful accomplishment.
All right. Below that is Robin Dies at Dawn.
That shit's good.
Fantastic Four Hereafter, which I like a lot.
I think this is better than Hereafter. I really do.
Okay. That would also put it above Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 7.
Matt, look. I think we can objectively agree that this is probably better.
Yeah, I think so too.
Does rule.
I would be very, very fine putting this at the new number 202 on the list between Robin Dies at Dawn and Fantastic Four Hereafter.
Yeah, I think that's a very good place to put it.
All right, that is going to be Thor, parentheses 2014, numbers 1-8.
And that is the beginning of Jane Foster Thor. Now, weirdly enough, I have read the end of Jane Foster Thor. And boy, if we ever do that one, that's going even higher.
Is that – that's pre-War of the Realms?
It is, yes. It is pre-War of the Realms.
Because she comes back as Thor in War of the Realms temporarily. Yes. But then pivots to being Valkyrie afterwards.
Yes. War of the Realms is where Mjolnir comes back, and the end of Jane Foster Thor is where Mjolnir gets destroyed.
Right.
Do you know how it gets destroyed, Matt?
I do know that, yes.
Yeah, the fucking Mangog comes back.
Yeah. Yeah, we will eventually get to that story. We should just do, like, big Hickman and Aaron rereads, because...
I mean, look, if that's all we did for Comics Catch-Up for the next year, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. They both have very impressive libraries of work at Marvel Comics.
Yes.
But these 8 issues are what we did this time, and we thank you for voting for it in the poll back in October, because even though this won the October poll, we saved it for this month so we could do something spooky in October. We will have a new poll in December for something else we should read.
Are we going to read? Christmas Eve, Matt.
Well, yeah, maybe we should do a poll of like 4 holiday stories.
We've already read all the clauses. Or I have. Have you read all the clauses?
I've read most of the clauses. I don't know if I've read the newest one.
Mm.
But I know I've read most of them. Because I have them in hardcover. I bought them in hardcover in Los Angeles last year.
In Los Angeles?
That's right. The mean streets of Los Angeles, California.
Talking about Lipstick City?
A That's right.
But yes, keep an eye out on at the Matt D. Wilson to find out when you can vote on what we'll be doing next. Will it be Christmassy?
Send us some ideas for some Christmassy stories that we could do for the for Comics Catch-Up. Maybe some recent ones.
We are always open to suggestion. Our only thing is we would prefer it if these were shows about things we liked. I don't know.
That may be too much to put on the listeners to be like, hey, only give us stuff we like and know what we like well enough to give us only stuff we like. But, send us some holiday stories you think we might like.
I mean, the thing is, I think they've tried so far to give us things we like, and I do appreciate that. People also do love it when we read things like Doomsday Clock.
Don't descend us the Doomsday Clock of Christmas stories.
Doomsday Clock of Christmas.
Doomsday Eve.
Doomsday Santa Tracker.
We'll work on it. We'll workshop it. See you next month, everybody, for more Comics Catch-Up.
Yeah, everybody. Good catching up.